Hour of Focus 580. It's our morning talk program here on WILL. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Martha Deal and Harriet Williamson, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the program, we will be talking about the issue of same-sex marriage. Our guest is Richard Moore, and he's professor of philosophy here at the University of Illinois. For a number of years now, he has been spending time writing and talking about social and legal issues affecting gay and lesbian Americans. And he's the author of a number of books, among them Gays, Justice, A Study of Ethics, Society, and Law. That came out in 1988. Gay Ideas, Outing and Other Controversies in 1992. And 1994, A More Perfect Union, Why Straight America Must Stand Up for Gay Rights. And he has a new book out that deals specifically with the subject of gay marriage, and it's titled The Long Arc of Justice, and it's published by the Columbia University Press. And as I say, it's been out here just a couple of months. By the way, I do also want to mention that he'll be doing a lecture and a book signing on the U of I campus. This is tomorrow. It takes place at the Illini Union Bookstore. That's at 809 South Wright in Champaign, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So anybody who's interested should definitely stop by. And if you'd like to meet him and talk with him and hear from him and pick up a copy of the book, you can do any and all of that. And here this morning on the program, as always, questions are welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Splendid to be here.
One of the points you make in the book, and maybe this place is starting, is you think that perhaps here in America now, we are getting to the point where at least we are talking about gay issues. We're talking about things like gay marriage. And you wouldn't have to go back too many more years before people wouldn't even, you know, women didn't even want to talk about it. And so you say that that's, in a way, the fact that there is a discussion at all is a sign of some progress?
Yes, and its significance is underestimated. The taboo covering discussing gay issues has all but collapsed in mainstream media. All you have to do is look at television to see this gay characters popping up everywhere. And the fact that the taboo is collapsing means that gays can no longer be sort of conceptualized as beyond the pale, sort of unspeakably gross. We set up taboos around things that we think are totally unacceptable, beyond the pale, unspeakable. And now that that has collapsed, America's sort of reconceptualizing gay and lesbians as a minority, something sort of conceptually equivalent to either hippies or Mormons, sort of almost a quasi-ethnic group where one's identity is sort of thickly defined by the label. So being gay constitutes a lifestyle. Being Mormon constitutes a lifestyle. Being a hippie constitutes a lifestyle. And so that's how America is moving in that direction. So less emphasis on sex, conceptualizing gays as a group rather than as people that have sex. America loves that. Then we don't have to deal with the ishy stuff. And so the collapse of the taboo is a huge progress. I mean, notice where the right has been investing its energies in the past, primarily to shore up the taboo. So they want to keep gay books out of libraries. They want to keep gay and lesbians out of parades. They don't want gays and lesbian issues discussed in school curriculum. They're basically trying to get the sinner to shut up, but that has failed. So now everybody has to discuss the substantive issues, and the right doesn't have very much to say, and liberals do.
Well, let me ask you about something that you just touched on that I wonder about sometimes. There are some people who will state their objection to homosexuality based on their religion. They will say that their religion teaches homosexuality is wrong. Then I think, though, that there's a much greater group of people who are just kind of uncomfortable with the notion of it. These are the people that I would say, it's not that they think that homosexuality is morally wrong. They just think it's icky. And so for that reason, it's sort of like, it's just not, it's not something they want to think about or they want to know about. Right. And I guess I wonder how many people in each of those groups.
I actually think there's huge progress being made even with that group as gay and lesbian people come out to their families, as families start respecting their gay members and show others that they're comfortable with gay people, then this sort of itchy factor sort of goes away. Mm. Plus, as I mentioned, if we just sort of cabin sex away from the whole thing, as America seems to want to do, that also overcomes the itchy factor.
Yeah. Well, that does, I suppose that does get at the issue that your idea about some person or some group, you may have one set of ideas. If you don't know anybody or you think that you don't know anybody that is a group member, it's an entirely different thing if you're talking about someone that you actually know.
Right. So the constituency for gay rights is growing and growing. Exit poll data shows that about 5% of Americans identify as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. Mm. Now, if those people are out to their family, suddenly we have, you know, almost everybody in America having a gay issue in their life. So I think there's going to be a lot of progress.
So you seem to be making the argument that is if there's been some lessening of that kind of visceral reaction that people mm-hmm. have to the idea of homosexuality, then if you're going to make arguments against it, they essentially it undercuts your emotional sort of arguments, and you have to, if you're going to make arguments, they have to be rational arguments.
And I think the ishy factor is what's engineering the notion that homosexuality is somehow unnatural. We appeal to this unnatural concept to sort of justify the fact that we have these ishy feelings, or people in general, not me. And then as the ishy goes away, these sort of appeals to the unnatural will go away as well. Notice that you don't hear much about that anymore in the gay marriage debate, for example. Hmm. And when the Supreme Court ruled that sodomy laws were unconstitutional, nobody on the right even objected to the substance of the decision. They just objected to activist judges. So that whole battle has been won by the gay and lesbians as well.
Well, let me ask you this question. Here we're specifically talking about gay marriage. That's the subject of the book and that's the subject of the conversation. But if you look at all of the various issues confronting gay people, how important is this one?
Well, marriage is incredibly important, and also the military, because progress can be made in those areas only if the government changes the law. Mm-hmm. Notice that people cannot be discriminated against. That doesn't require the government doing something, and there will be a social relaxation around gay people. There will be less social discrimination against gay people. But marriage in this country is viewed as a creation of the law. So you have to change the law. You can't just change people's social attitudes and get what's needed. So that's why it really has become such a crucial issue on the political legal front. But also it has to do with the nature of marriage. Marriage is how people sort of configure their day-to-day living. In fact, I define marriage as the development and maintenance of intimacy through day-to-day living. So marriage puts together your intimate relationships with how you get your basic needs met by having a household and having your food and family and even our sex lives. And so it's not as though the sorts of things that marriage do can be accommodated in some other way. So quite aside from the legal issue, it's the importance of marriage in people's lives that puts this to the forefront. I mean, before, society somehow thought that gays, especially gay men, were just sort of rabbits that did it all the time and didn't have emotional lives and didn't love each other. And so there's this new dawning that, oh my heavens, gay love is love, and this raises the practical problem for society. What do we do with this? I think simply the pragmatism in America is going to be pushing in the direction of legalizing gay families one way or another.
Yeah. It seems that there are some people who are at least more amenable to the idea of domestic partner legislation, so that what would happen is that essentially a gay couple should have under law the same rights, the same protections as a heterosexual couple. Mm-hmm. Would that... And I suppose there are some people who argue that that's going to have to be an intermediate step before you take the full step.
Right.
Is that – in what way is that different?
Okay. It's a very complicated question. So when the rights and obligations and benefits that gay and lesbian couples have are exactly the same as heterosexuals, those are usually called civil unions. Mm-hmm. And then if the rights and benefits are somewhat less than that, then they're called domestic partnership. It's a thin line distinguishing them. Mm-hmm. But just assume that gay and lesbians are allowed to have all the same rights and obligations and benefits of marriage as heterosexually married people do. Is that sufficient? Are gays overreaching if they want to have marriage as well? So now we only have, remember the distinction now is what the label is on the top of your certificate. Right. Some certificates have marriage on the top of them and some have civil union on the top of them. So what's going on here? I mean, the fact that people seem to be 60% exit poll data from the last election found that 60% of Americans supported either gay marriage or civil unions. This is heading towards a constitutional majority, though a very small minority actually supported gay marriage. So what is this cleavage? Well, I think that marriage as a ritual has an important role in America that America is unwilling to give up. This may be a little complicated, but marriage, the actual rites and rituals of it, serve in our country as a sort of initiation rite. It's an initiation rite into heterosexuality itself. Let me explain by means of an analogy. Take a typical initiation rite by which a boy becomes a man in lots of societies. The boy doesn't become a man simply by biology, and the boy doesn't become a man simply by performing manly behavior. He has to actually go through the ritual to become a full man. So do I want to say that in America, one doesn't become heterosexual either through biology or through heterosexual sexual behavior. Indeed, if we look at people who have lots of conspicuous heterosexual sexual behavior, Don Juan, Lothario, Casanova, our inclination now is to view those people as closet cases. Why? Because promiscuity is a sign of homosexuality. So how do you become fully heterosexual in our society now? Well, you do it through the rites and rituals of marriage. Now, this is then the emotional crisis. If we let gay and lesbians get married, then heterosexuals won't be heterosexuals. They'll just be people. Horrors, huh? Mm. And this explains the electricity circulating around the use of the term marriage. It's the role that it plays in society's identification of itself to itself, more particularly heterosexuals' identification of themselves to themselves. Look at how the issue is discussed. We have everybody, Democrats, Republicans, almost everybody but gay people, are willing to talk this language that marriage is sacred. Well, what do these people think gay relationships are? Unsacred, unholy, dirty? That seems to be the implication. Our president says that the nation should honor, that's his word, honor the relationship between one man and one woman. Well, what is this other than saying that heterosexuals are the best people, the finest people, better than everyone else, certainly better than gays and lesbians? So the refusal to let gays and lesbians marry, even if they're given all the rights and benefits of marriage, is an insult to gay people. It says you're worthless, you're dirt, you're scum, you're not a full person. And so serious issues of dignity are raised by the distinction between marriage and civil unions, even if civil unions give gays and lesbians all the rights and benefits, all the cookies, as it were, of marriage. So civil unions are a good step on the way to marriage. I mean, some people oppose them, think that the gay and lesbian movement will get high-centered if we get civil unions. But once you have civil unions, then you get these things in the court and look at the position judges are in. Judges have to say, now what's the difference here between the civil unions and the marriages? Just a name? Well, that sounds irrational. And then it's likely that judges will overturn them. at this point notice that questions of heterosexuals having children, and that's what distinguishes marriage from non-marriage, has been left far in the dust.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Richard Moore. He's professor of philosophy at University of Illinois and has written quite a lot on gay issues. And his most recent book is The Long Arc of Justice. The subtitle is Lesbian and Gay Marriage, Equality and Rights. It's published by the Columbia University Press. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. It seems to me that if we go back some ways, I'm not sure how far we'd have to go back, a few decades, that we would have found greater numbers of gay men and lesbians really disparaging the idea of marriage as to something.
I can tell you.
From
the political left, there has been this critique of marriage, especially from the feminist left, that marriage is too sexist, too violent, too oppressive an institution ever to be salvaged. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's the case. Over the last few decades, there's just been enormous strides in changing the structure of marriages, heterosexual marriages, in the direction of justice. So it used to be that men had an obligation to support the wife's material circumstances, but not vice versa. And now that's equal. It used to be that women couldn't make contracts on their own. Now that's all equal. Everything's been moving in the direction of equality between the genders within marriage. In fact, there are now no gender distinctions left within marriage, where we have something about marriage that requires a male and something about marriage that requires a female. So there doesn't seem to be any formal reason for maintaining this distinction that there needs to be one man and one woman within the relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were dire things. It used to be that a man could not, by definition, rape his wife. Why? The concept was, well, that would be equivalent to the man raping himself, and that couldn't be done. All of those things are gone now, pretty much by the late 80s, either by legislation or through court actions. Gender differentiations within marriage all went away. So it, as a sexist institution, if it is, it's because of social forces rather than legal forces. And I think there will be a sort of dialectical development between heterosexual relationships and gay relationships. I think gay relationships have things in them that heterosexuals can learn from. In male relations, for example, the relationship itself is frequently conceived of as a third element within the relationship. This allows a certain latitude and looseness of the joints rather than just having this sort of two people bound together. We now have sort of three elements forming a sort of open texture. So things aren't as quite as claustrophobic or paranoid as relationships frequently are between just two people. That's just an example. Mm. Relationships change over time. Studies of gay male relationships have shown that the relationship isn't the same on day one as it is after 10 or 20 years. And yet, legally, we view them as exactly the same on day one as later. The only acknowledgement that relationships change that I'm aware of is that a spouse's Social Security benefits become vested after 10 years. If you get divorced after 10 years, you still have a claim on Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. So, and it's possible that gays will learn things about intimacy from heterosexual relationships. Certainly the acceptability of long-term monogamous relationships, something that many gay men, like in the 70s, thought was just an abomination.
Well, that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about. And so, I guess I'm wondering whether I'm wrong in thinking that there would have been a time, in addition to the other kind of things that you mentioned, that that maybe some gay people would have just said marriage was just hopelessly bourgeois, and it was just not the kind of we wanted to do, the kind of thing that we wanted to do, and that if now we have greater numbers of people who are interested in being married, I wonder if that says something about a kind of maturity that has come into the movement.
Well, I'm hesitant to use that word. It sounds so patronizing. I would rather talk about a straight relationships learning from gay relationships and gay relationships learning from straight relationships and not talk about maturity and immaturity. That doesn't get us very far.
Okay. One of the central questions that you deal with in this book is the definition of marriage.
Yes.
And it seems to be a key point now as people are debating this whole issue of same-sex marriage. And it seems that there are some people who, as part of their fundamental definition, their definition is it's a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. So there's not too – if that's the place where you start, that's not going too far. But I think what's interesting is that it's so much of the way that we talk about marriage – and if we try to come up with definitions, it really is – there is very little thought given to what happens in the marriage. What exactly is it for? We look at what the constituent parts are, but we don't really say anything about what happens in marriage. And I think you're really making the argument for the companion marriage, which if you look at the history of the family, actually is not an idea that's been around very long.
Oh, actually it is. My definition of marriage is that it's the development and maintenance of intimacy through the instrumentality of day-to-day living, how you meet your basic needs. And this isn't actually revolutionary. It's our concept of a common law marriage. Until the middle of the 19th century in this country, the majority of people who got married did not go to the government and get a license from them that created them as a married couple. Rather, they set up households together and held themselves out to the public as conducting their intimacies through this medium of everyday life. And then the law acknowledged that as a marriage. So in a common law marriage, the marriage itself is a mode of living, which then is legally acknowledged by the state, but the state doesn't create the relationship. Most states around 1900 and Illinois in 1914 eliminated common law marriage. So you were only married if you had the license. Mm-hmm. Okay, and to do so to live together without a license actually became illegal. That became cohabitation and was illegal. So I'm just trying to get America back to its traditional common law tradition. The common law marriage exists still in 14 states. It's funny. They're scattered everywhere around the country except along the West Coast. So it seems very strange. So, yeah, so my definition of marriage isn't revolutionary at all. It's, in fact, the traditional understanding of marriage.
Let's talk with someone. We have someone here wanting to bring in, come into the conversation in Champaign. It's line number one. Hello.
I agree with what you said about common law marriage. Historically, I grew up in Georgia. And in the 40s, as a school child, I learned there was such a thing as common law marriage. Mm-hmm. And it was respected. Mm-hmm. I think if you live together for either 4 years or 5 years, you are automatically considered married. I don't know what the laws are there now because it's been so long since I lived there.
The period of living together was actually what's called an evidentiary rule rather than what created the marriage. The marriage was acknowledged as existing from day one. After 7 years, no one could legally challenge it.
Okay.
So, for example, a child born after 2 years in a common law marriage was a legitimate child. We didn't have to wait to year 9 and 10 for the children to be considered legitimate.
Right.
So the couple was married legally as soon as they set up shop together and held out their relation to the public as a marriage. If the couple held out their relationship as though they were brother and sister or cousins or something, then in fact it wasn't considered a marriage legally.
Well, the reason I'm calling, I wanted to hear from you about how gay couples, and I've even read heterosexual couples in some states, but I'm thinking specifically of Illinois, if one of them becomes desperately ill and they don't have that certificate of marriage, I've heard they're penalized. They can't even see their partner when they're near death, mm-hmm. and so forth. And my information goes back about 5 years, but I wonder if anything has been done in other states. And I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Right.
I think it's grossly unfair.
In Illinois, you actually can do things. The laws aren't set up specifically for gay people, but in Illinois now there are living medical powers of attorney. Mm. And if you have your partner have the powers of medical attorney, then they have to be allowed to have access to you. And interestingly enough, it even covers the disposition of the body after death. There are frequently horror stories where one member of a male couple dies, and then the other one, then that the dead person's family intervenes and doesn't even let the lover come to the funeral. Now in Illinois, if you have medical powers of attorney, that's covered. So gays and lesbians couples in Illinois need to get all the legal protections that are available to them just as the law stands.
So is that a new law?
It's about 10 years old now.
So, is that right? And what about heterosexual couples living together?
Well,
can they do that too?
I'm not sure whether you can have I think you can have medical powers of attorney assigned to someone other than your spouse. That I'd have to check.
I think you can. And actually, I think there are some people who would recommend for heterosexual married couples that they also should have this durable power of attorney for health care in case there's any sort of question if their partner is something happens
to them. Yeah, I know about that, but
incapacitated.
I was wondering if they are not. Because I went through a phase of that for about 2 years. Yeah.
So as Illinois gradually gets its legal act together, and Illinois just passed in January a civil rights bill, which means that gay and lesbians can no longer be discriminated against in employment, housing, public accommodations, and insurance, the next phase will begin to address domestic partnership issues. But in the interim, gay and lesbian couples should get durable powers of attorney, durable powers of medical attorney. There's a packet about four things that you can sign and just go to attorney and do it. I've known too many horror stories where things came up and people didn't have those and people were blocked from visiting in hospitals and after death.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to another caller. This is Bloomington, Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Moore, about the definition of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You have defined marriage as the development of intimacy through day-to-day living, kind of a companionship. And you have also said that marriage was an initiation rite into sexuality.
The society currently views the ritual of getting married as an initiation rite, yes.
Well, these definitions are not in my Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, which is a modern dictionary.
I know. Dictionary definitions are really lousy in this regard. The standard dictionary definition of marriage refers to spouses. And then you look up spouses, and then spouses are husbands and wives.
Yeah.
But what are husbands and wives? Well, they're people that are married to each other. So the definition of what marriage is turns out to be circular. It presupposes the very thing it's trying to define. And so, in fact, we are left with no content whatsoever.
Well, I distinctly remember homosexual spokesmen saying that they were not trying to redefine marriage. And they claimed they were simply trying to end discrimination. So when you come on Focus 580 and tell us that marriage is something we don't find in the dictionary at all, we think, how shall we say, disingenuous? Here's the problem that I have. Marriage is one man and one woman, because this one man, one woman-based family is the uniquely successful way of producing children and then socializing children. So that these children become happy, productive members of civilized society. And it's not just the United States. It's not government. Civilization depends on this one woman, one man institution called marriage. And it's universal. Every country has recognized the one woman, one man.
Well, except the Old Testament doesn't.
Oh, yes, it does.
We have gobs and gobs of polygamous marriages back then.
Yeah, there were polygamous marriages.
Oh, so it's not one man and one woman.
No, they
so that when marriage occurs in when marriage occurs in the Bible, and then we go to the dictionary, and the dictionary says one man and one woman, then in fact the Bible is redefining the term marriage. Horrors.
Professor Moore, the fact that something occurs in the Bible does not mean that it was authorized or moral. It occurs, but it's not authorized.
Oh, really? Okay. In any case, notice that we will allow marriage people to get married who are constitutionally incapable of having children. Just think of Bob and Elizabeth Dole. No amount of Viagra is going to get Elizabeth pregnant, right? And we allow people who are in their 60s to get married where they're constitutionally incapable of having children.
Yes, but
so, in fact, marriage is disengaged from people having children. Even Antonin Scalia in the 2003 sodomy decision said, look, if we say gays and lesbians have a constitutional right to have sex, what's going to prevent us from being forced to say that they're allowed to marry, since in fact we allow people who are incapable of having children, who are infertile, get married? So even a smart right-wing person has already twigged to this problem.
The fact that married men and women are not obliged to have children does not in any way damage the institution of marriage.
It's not that they're not obliged. It's that they can't and are allowed to be married anyway.
That in no way damages the institution of marriage. But we have seen that wherever homosexual marriage has...
Why doesn't it? Because these people are getting all these benefits without doing their duty.
There is no duty to have children, but wherever homosexual marriage...
They're getting the benefits without fulfilling the definition of marriage, which according to you is to have children. So they're cheating.
Wherever homosexual marriage has been legalized and has been indulged in, I'm talking about Europe, it has downgraded the definition of marriage so people don't bother to get married. It's a real social harm when people have children outside of wedlock. That's a damaging situation.
The reason that fewer people get married in Europe and Canada is because these countries have national health care plans so that they're not channeling all the social benefits through marriage. In America, the country has decided to channel all sorts of just overwhelming benefits through the institution of marriage. So it also tends to channel people into marriage. I'm afraid that the creation of gay marriage is not what's preventing people from getting married.
Wherever homosexual marriage has been socialized for a considerable period of time, you have a degradation of marriage.
In what way is it degraded?
People don't bother to get married to have children. They have children. They just don't bother to. Marriage
is... What I suggested was that there are other explanations for that, which you haven't even entertained. So we're going around in a circle. Talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go on. I don't think that you and the caller are going to agree anyway, no matter how long we give you time to discuss. This gets at something an issue that I raised before, I guess, and that was here we have somebody who is arguing for a particular kind of definition of marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people would make the argument that for a long time, marriage was something that was part of the orderly regulation of society, and that one of its important functions, maybe its most important function, had something to do with inheritance and how you establish property ownership and so forth, and that it did give legitimacy, quote unquote, to children. And I guess I'm going back to the point that I was thinking that the idea of marriage, the kind of idea of marriage that you talk about, has as something that is primarily there for the development, the enhancement, the pleasure of the individuals, is if you ask how long has that really been a popular way of thinking about marriage, I guess it seems to me that that's really been less than 100 years, notwithstanding the idea that we did have common law marriage.
The function of marriage as legitimating children and the law making distinctions between legitimate and illegitimate children is now recognized as one of the gross injustices of history. the courts have now found that since 1972 that the law can no longer make distinctions of benefits based on legitimacy and illegitimacy. So you don't want to hang marriage on this distinction, which itself turned out to be an unjust distinction. Lots of gay and lesbian people, couples, have children. The 2000 census found that 33% of lesbian couples were raising children 18 or younger, and that 20% of 22, so over a fifth of gay male relationships, were as well. So here's just a social reality, and saying that gay and lesbians don't have children just turns out to be false. A lot of states are sort of having legal gay families and gay marriage come in through the back door through what's called second parent adoptions. There are now 20 states, including Illinois, where judges have said that, well, one lesbian is a biological mother of the child, and then her partner gets to adopt the child without the biological mother losing custody rights in the child. Mm-hmm. So the child now has two moms. And judges say that this is in the best interest of the children. Not surprisingly, the child now has legal claims to two salaries, two pension plans, whole bunches of goodies. But what's interesting about this is that this legal rule requires overturning a major tenet of family law, namely that when one person gets custody of a child, somebody else has to lose it. And judges simply pragmatically have noticed that, well, that gets in the way of children having their best interests advanced, so they simply overlook it. So we have gay and lesbian families being created through second parent adoptions. We then have to ask, why don't we just let the parents get married now that they're both parents of the same child? This seems to be the rational thing to do, and pragmatism will push us in that direction.
We have several other callers. We have about 15 minutes left. Our guest is Richard Moore. He's professor of philosophy at the University of Illinois, has written a lot on gay issues. His newest book is titled The Long Arc of Justice, Lesbian and Gay Marriage, Equality and Rights. That's the subtitle. It's published by the Columbia University Press. And he will be doing a book signing, a talk and a book signing at the Illini Union Bookstore tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. That's on South Wright. So anyone interested should feel welcome to stop by. We have some other callers here. We'll get to next someone in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to address the notion that marriage is a fixed institution, which is something that the previous caller was implying or saying outright, I guess. My feeling is that marriage is a social construct that has evolved probably slowly enough that we always think that it has always been the way that it is now, but at previous times, marriage has been defined as between one man and however many women he felt that he wanted to marry, or a man was actually in ownership of his wife, or and also in previous times, marriage has allowed a man to rape or otherwise abuse his wives, and these are things that we have gradually, fortunately, allowed to disappear from our notion of the institution of marriage. And I was wondering if your speaker would have anything to add to that.
Oh, no, I agree with that. As far as a legal institution goes, all the things that you've mentioned have gone away. My definition doesn't actually require there being marriage being a social construction. It could be something that existed in all times and places. I don't want, though, to say that it's something that is embedded in nature for man to follow and that everyone's required to get married by my definition. My definition just makes marriage something that's acceptable, something that gay and lesbian people can stand behind. I'm not suggesting that everyone should or ought and must get married. Some gay conservatives think this. People like Jonathan Rauch think that marriage is the only institution in which we can properly configure sexuality and intimacy, that marriage is the institution that tames the otherwise untamed beast of sexuality, so that everyone has to get married or they'll be sexually crazy. I just think that's a dumb view. Rather, marriage is something that's acceptable. It's a good. It's not the only good. Not everyone is supposed to march in the marriage bandwagon.
All right. Let's go to Bloomington, Illinois next. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon. Great conversation. Just a quick comment and a question. Years ago, I worked as a counselor and did family therapy, and I found in my work I worked with gay couples, straight couples, people who had kids, and I think one of the main issues or one of the points that people miss is that they tend to brush with a very wide stroke of, you know, all gay couples are, you know, would raise their kids in this way and all straight couples in that way. And, you know, from my experience, it being a small, just 2 years of doing the work, is that I found, you know, straight couples that, you know, I wouldn't let babysit my cat. And I've found, you know, gay couples that I would let them, you know, take care of, you know, my mom or my dad. And so I think that, that people need to look more at the individual instead of looking at group characteristics. But my question is that how many comparisons in your research do you see with the current arguments from sort of the more conservative side of the spectrum and more religious conservative side against gay marriage? How many of those are comparable to the arguments in the 50s and 60s against interracial marriages? Because I did some research in undergraduate and saw that a lot of the same arguments that were using that white conservatives were using in the 50s and 60s against interracial marriage were very similar to arguments that some people use today.
Yes, let me see if I can give a let me try to give an interesting answer rather than a simple answer. Interracial marriages or bans against them were the last racial distinctions to fall in the eyes of the law. Very interesting. So it took 13 years after we had integrated schools that the Supreme Court knocked down laws that said blacks couldn't marry whites and whites couldn't marry blacks. So marriage was the interracial marriage was the crucial social issue. And that's because marriage for white people, pure blood marriages, were the institution by which whiteness was maintained. So that marriages of just white people to white people, and blacks could marry Latinos and Latinos could marry Asians, the laws required that whites marry whites, was to maintain the very nature of what whiteness is. So that if blacks could marry whites, then whiteness would no longer exist, just as if gays and lesbians were allowed to marry, heterosexuality would no longer be heterosexuality. These people would just be people. So I think that is the exact parallel. And when the Supreme Court overruled, they're called anti-miscegenation laws, laws that didn't let blacks marry whites, the reason they did so is they said that these were a central part of a system of white supremacy. And I think eventually a similarly wise court will say that laws that bar gays and lesbians from marriage are an integral part of heterosexual supremacy. And so, that in fact, the same-sex marriage issue and the interracial marriage issue all have very strong parallels.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Again, thank you for the call. We'll continue. And our next person up is on our line number 2, and this is someone in Chicago. Hello.
Hello. First of all, I disagree with this, your guest. I do agree with the man that was from Indiana. But I do want to say that what about siblings of the same sex who have lived together most of their lives, who are, you know, who are not sexually active with each other? Mm-hmm. They will not benefit. They do not benefit by any insurance or anything else that gay couples, homosexual couples, would be getting advantage of. And the other thing is, how is it that gays, homosexuals, cannot just live together? If they, you know, they could live together and love each other as heterosexual male and females do. I do find that the advantage to the homosexuals insisting on being married is to benefit by all pensions, etc., insurance, as you said, and there are laws on the books for you to visit someone if they're ill, etc., etc. As you stated, there's no discrimination there. There's plenty of laws on the books.
Well, no, just one example. People that are married to each other automatically inherit from each other in the absence of a will. That's only available to gays and lesbians if the law is changed.
So
the law needs to be changed if gays and lesbians aren't going to be discriminated against.
There's durable powers of attorney.
That, in fact, does not...
There's durable power of attorney for medical, and there's a durable power of attorney for estate.
Those don't begin to cover everything that marriage covers. The
like you said, the congressional... and the insurance...
So, they cover some things, but not nearly everything.
Congress
in 1996 did an investigation to see how many laws in America made distinctions with regard to marriage, and they found that there was 1,049 laws that give people benefits and rights based on marriage. Gays and lesbians, through durable powers
which
of attorney,
they will
have
not benefit from
no
it,
access
it?
To those.
You can't
claim that gays and lesbians are not discriminated against, as long as you admit that there are these 1,049 laws that gays don't have access to.
I'm single, and my sister is single, and we live a very good life, honest life, etc. We would not benefit either. And how is it that you cannot just live?
Oh, I think that states probably should set up legal arrangements for the type of situation that you have. But that's not to say that gays shouldn't be allowed to be married. These are two somewhat different issues.
Well, why shouldn't we be able to get married and get the benefits?
Because you don't meet the definition that I've given.
Which is the definition?
The definition is that your intimate relationship develops through
I'm
the instrumentalities of day-to-day life.
I'm going to jump in here because we're getting very short on time. I think, in fact, caller, that the guest is actually agreeing with you. He would have no problem with setting up a legal of giving, say, you and your sister some of the same legal benefits as a married couple.
We could do that without having gays destroy our society. Homosexuals destroy our society even further down the line.
Okay. Well, that's a whole nother point now, isn't it? We're going really short on time. I guess I'm just really curious, though, caller.
For insurance, pensions, etc., to become more secular, materialistic, money-wise, etc.
I'd be curious to know why you think gay marriage would destroy civilization.
Why would allowing gays to marry destroy civilization? That's what you said.
Destroying society.
In what way?
You cannot just live together as roommates, as heterosexuals that are male and female live together.
Because gays and lesbians, to have the sort of solid, stable relationships, need the sort of nesting of the relationship within a network of laws.
Well, again, you and the caller will not agree. And actually, I'm not really sure that we have time for the last caller. Maybe I'll not do that because I don't think we could really give them time to make their case, say whatever they have to say, and get some response from you. You believe overall that gay men and lesbians are people that do face discrimination over a broad range of issues?
Oh, well, just on marriage, as I say, this congressional study found 1,049 laws that give benefits to people who are married, deny them to people who are not married, and all gay and lesbian people are put in this category of people who can't get married. So, yes, that's pretty massive discrimination. But progress is occurring. Just last week, the state of Connecticut passed civil union laws for gays and lesbians without being prompted by a court to do so. California has given gays and lesbians all the rights of marriage except filing joint tax returns. So Blue America is going to be moving in this direction, and America tends to have family law uniform. And so I suspect it will spread eventually even to the red states.
Well, we have to stop. We're at the end of the time. If you would like to read more on the subject, look for the book, The Long Arc of Justice, by our guest Richard Moore, professor of philosophy at the U of I, published by the Columbia University Press. He'll be doing a lecture and a book signing tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Illini Union Bookstore on South Wright in Champaign. So you can stop by. Thanks very much.
Great being here. Good talk.
Today's broadcast made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Champaign County CASA, who recruits, trains, and monitors volunteer advocates for abused and neglected children. The show also made possible with support from the Art Mart in Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Coming up on our show tomorrow morning, in the first part of the program, we'll be talking with Dr. Paul Joffe. He's counselor and director of the Suicide Prevention Program at the U of I Counseling Center, and that's what we'll talk about, suicide prevention on college campuses. That's the first hour. We're here weekday mornings 10 to noon, and we have 10 different topics every week. We always welcome your questions and comments. And right now, we're going to turn things over to Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we will talk with journalist Azra Nomani. She is the author of Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. She joins us this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look at what's happening on the Board of Trade, and Merck prices are higher. May wheat, 327.5, up 18.25. July, 338, that up 18.75. May corn, 214.5, up 5.25. July, 223.25, up 5.75. September, 230.5, up 6. December corn, 239.5, up 5.5. May soybeans, 649.5, up 16.5. July, 656.25, up 15.75. November beans, 641, up 13. May meal, 204.20, up 8.10. May oil, 2306, up 25. April feeder cattle, 111.22.5, that up 75. April live cattle, 93.30, up 127.5. May lean hog, 75.25, up 2.5. May bellies, 82.30, up 95. June crude, 55.10, down 29. The CRB index, 309.79, up